Now, let me introduce our first speaker, Dr. Peter Greenwood. And he's the director of the RAND Corporation's Criminal Justice Research Program. Now, he's recently written a paper comparing the California three strikes law with four prevention strategies. For each strategy, he estimates the number of crimes prevented for each $1 million spent. Now, as you can imagine, this has generated a tremendous amount of interest from across the country. He's been in Washington, D.C., and four other states discussing this paper so far. So we're happy that he would join us in Wisconsin today to discuss this paper, Diverting Children from a Life of Crime, Costs and Benefits. Welcome to Wisconsin.
Thank you, Karen. It's a delight to be here. When I found out I was going to be the first speaker, and since I left L.A. yesterday and got in here about midnight, I'm still a little bit on California time and a little bit sleepy. And I said, you've got to warm up the audience. And I thought that was a very, you know, you get people to stand. And I wonder how you get everybody here. In Los Angeles, when we have an 8 o'clock meeting, about 8:15, 8:20, we start saying, has anybody checked the freeway? Should we start soon? You think we can start by 8:30? So this is, I wondered how you get going on time, and you have everybody stand up 1 minute after the appointed hour. That's a very effective technique. Well, since I'm going to get to give you an abbreviated talk, I have to drop all of the sex, drugs, crime, and violence out of the talk. You get that on the TV news anyway, and we cut right to the chase and get to prevention. If you would show me the first, put on the next slide. This all started in 1994. California passed the most sweeping of all the three strikes laws that any state have passed. There's about 20 now who have passed these laws for repeat offenders. They lock up people based on the term is lengthened based on their prior record. The California one is achieved a certain notoriety because once you have one serious felony that includes residential burglary, any crime after that, you're no longer eligible for probation. You get double the term prescribed by law, and you've got to serve 85% of it. And once you have two serious felonies on your record, you get a life term for anything. That's drug possession, that's petty theft, anything with a felon. So we get lots of people going to prison. And this diagram was, and of course, we're locking up thousands of people under that three strikes law, and a prison system that increased by 400% over the past decade is busy looking at doubling again in the next 6 to 10 years. And the problem with all those approaches, which is the natural one, I mean, it's the presidential debate. Most states have been following this pattern. These are the bad guys that are hurting us. Let's lock them up for a long period of time. Well, there's a few of those. But actually, crime is a young man's game. And this chart shows you what, this is California data, shows you homicide arrests per 100,000 persons for a couple different years. We've got 1980, 86. In 92 there, you see over on the right-hand side, we have the old men of crime, the 24 to 26-year-olds, and you see they've been steadily dropping. Part of it is because we're putting the worst ones away. But what's going on down at the other end, the 15 to 17-year-olds, the 18 to 20s, these are the ones who have the highest homicide arrest rate, and they're the ones who are growing the fastest. And this is pretty general all around the country. And so three strikes and you're out, lock them up for a long time, takes care of the older ones, but it doesn't do anything with these younger ones that are coming along. And, of course, you know the demographics. You know we're now about to get the junior baby boomer, whatever it's called, and we're going to get more of these young kids. And so it raises the issue, fine, we can take care of these old offenders. We're going to lock them up for a long period of time. We're going to increase the proportion of our state budget that goes to corrections. In many states, it's up to 10% now, and in many states, it's the fastest-growing part of the budget. How do we get off this treadmill? And the way off is through prevention. You got to try and stop the offenders that are coming up in the future, who are going to fill the courts and fill the prisons in the future if you don't do something about it. So can I have my next slide? And so what we did when we finished the three strikes talk and talked about it to various audiences. The annual cost in California is something like $5 billion a year. We're going to spend on prison operation. We said, suppose we took some of that money and spent it on prevention. And people say, well, fine, but we don't know what that would get. That's pure speculation. And it turned out that nobody had really done that kind of cost-benefit analysis of the programs. We have lots of academic studies that say this particular kind of a program, random assignment, kids in a control group, experimental group does better. But nobody has translated that into what do we really get in terms of crime prevention. So what this study I'm going to summarize for you, and you've got a summary of it in your report, we developed a framework for doing this. The problem is you're going to spend money when kids are, some of them at zero at birth, some of them 8, 9 years old, some of them early teenage years, and then you're going to wait, in some cases 20 years, before you start to see what the crime reduction effects are. So you got this complicated invest now, wait a long time to see what happens. We developed the framework for doing that. We reviewed programs that were reported in the literature. We didn't. So there are lots of reviews that help tell you what the promising programs are. And then we said, what would happen if we tried to implement these things in California? We tried to estimate what the populations would be that would come into them. And then we compared those results to, here's what we're spending on three strikes to prevent crime. And the operational dollar through the lock 'em up strategy is, it costs about $16,000 for every serious crime we prevented with this mandatory sentencing. Now, it's going to differ from state to state, but you're probably up in that kind of a ballpark when you're trying to prevent crime by locking people up for long periods of time. Okay, next one. The issue is, how do you target the kids who you want to reach? One of the difficulties of prevention is it doesn't do much good to try and apply this to everybody, so-called universal programs. The research that's been done shows you get much more impact on the really high-risk kind of kids. The question is, how do you find them? Well, for the very youngest, you target their moms. The general pattern is the poor, the single, the young. If they have alcohol or substance abuse problems, if there's some kind of crime history in the family, that puts them also at high risk. But this is the general characteristic for healthy start targeting. Next, as soon as children get older, you have some kind of behavioral pattern to go on. And again, behavior is the best predictor of future behavior. So kids who are acting out, having problems in school, it may be some kind of learning disability, or it may be a behavioral problem, it may be a problem at home. Kids who, again, drop out, they're truant, they begin experimenting with substances. You're probably gonna hear something from Phyllis, tobacco, alcohol, marijuana at early ages. Again, our signals, and then finally those who start getting arrested at the youngest ages. And some start getting arrested, 11, 12 years old. That's the target of who the kids are. Next. So here are the four programs we assessed. One is home visits to high-risk mothers by child care professionals, followed by daycare. So this is a 5-year program. You target the high-risk moms, you get them into prenatal health care, you do the home visits, and then when they get to be 18 months, 2 years, you get them into some kind of center-based program. Healthy Start in the state of Hawaii and many other counties. Number two is parent training. This is for the child who's, the teacher notices this child is acting out, difficult in school, calls in the parents. The parents say, he won't mind me. He won't come home when I say, he won't do anything. I can't get him to listen to me. So the parents who have a child who's out of control. So this is parent training where the parents are trained in basic behavioral techniques with the child. It's not a didactic classroom exercise. It's actually coaching one-on-one. The parents learn how to apply these behavioral techniques. And they get to see some immediate impacts on their child as they begin to use them. And so it's 10 to 20 sessions of one-on-one counseling, a lot lower cost than the 5-year program that came first. The third one is cash and other incentives to induce disadvantaged high school students to graduate. This is the Quantum Opportunities Program that was funded by the Ford Foundation, tested in about 4 sites. The total cost is about $12,000 over 4 years, $3,100 a year per student. Some of it, they get paid to study. Some of it, they get a kind of graduation bonus that goes into a trust fund that's available for them to use for college or for some kind of trade school when they get out. And there's a kind of club and a counselor and what have you, so peer pressure is involved. But the whole idea is to keep kids who are at high risk of dropping out of high school in school. And the last one is structured community programs for young delinquents. These are the first ones, the earliest ones who get arrested at around age 12. Generally, we spend our juvenile justice dollars the way we spend our adult dollars on the kids who scare the pants off us. And a 12-year-old doesn't scare anybody, so we say, go home, maybe the parents will be able to take care of it. But if you got a 12-year-old getting arrested in the company of 14 or 15-year-olds, it's a clear signal that something's probably wrong at home. And so these programs don't just look at the kid, they look at the parents. It may involve the more structured school setting, after-school supervision, work with the parents or what have you, but it's a trying to look at what's going on there. A lot of those programs have been run by academics and reviewed in the literature. and we have a number of counties now that are trying to start those kind of programs. Focus is on the child and the family situation. Next. I'm not going to have time. Again, I had to drop the sex and violence. I'm also going to have to drop the mathematics here that go through how we get these results. So you're going to have to trust me on this or read the whole thing. We got three different numbers we got to come up with. What's the reduction in serious crime amongst the program participants? That's the hard one. That's what we draw the literature. The next one is, what's the serious crimes we would have gotten from these kids if we didn't do in the program? Well, the control group and all these things pretty much tells us this. And finally, what's the cost per program participant? Okay. This is the hard one. These bar charts, and you'll see the first one, home visits and daycare. The top of that chart is 50%. In the academic studies that are run, if you got the Yale Guidance Clinic or some other place like that doing this with 50 kids, you're going to find a 50% reduction in the targeted behaviors, in child abuse, in need for special education, in reports of children acting out in school. Well, the first problem we're going to have is the Yale Child Guidance Clinic isn't going to be the one who runs it in your county. So we have to think about what would happen if the L.A. County Health Department or your local health department here ran that. And normally we find there's some kind of a degradation in program effectiveness. It doesn't have quite the integrity. It doesn't have quite the training. So we lose something. And that's what that first green bar is meant to be. It's our estimate of what you lose. Head Start's the classic example. We've got some very neat pilot programs that have this great impact, and then we implement it in some counties, and we don't find nearly the impact we found in the experimental studies. So the green bar is, how do we get conservative? How do we estimate what the loss in effectiveness is as we scale up, is what we call. The pink bar is the second one. Is this deals with the problem of, we're going to implement this thing when the kids are 0 to 5 years old, but we don't expect any impact till they get to be 15 or 16. Usually these prevention programs wear off over time. They're back with their families. They're back into the difficult school or community situation they're in. So the impacts wear off. And so the pink bar here is meant to account for this discounting that occurs over time. So it's much heavier on the home visits and daycare. It's much less on graduation incentives because you're dealing with the kids right when they're at their high crime period, and it's very little for the delinquency programs because we already have counties running those and those kids are in their high crime years. So this is a big deal here to try and go from the pilot studies that the academics run to what would happen in a real public policy situation if these were implemented. So it's meant to be conservative. We've gone from 50% impact down to about 12% for home visits and daycare, for instance, when we estimate what the real impact on crime will be. Next. I'm not going to spend much time on this one. This is the targeting. This is, what would the kids do if they weren't in the program? If you take just the general population, you don't get too much impact. Home visits and daycare, we estimate by targeting the young, poor, single mothers, you're going to get kids that are at least twice as at risk as the general population. So you get twice as much impact as if you didn't do any screening. By the time you get up to the delinquency program, you have kids that are 4 or 5 times more at risk than the ordinary average child in terms of what you'd expect in future crime. And again, targeting is the name of the game. The more you can target and bring in the high-risk kids, the more impact your program is going to have. Big difficulty in prevention programs in this field, in crime and violence prevention, is often people run a program and open the doors, and who do they get? They get the kids whose mothers will drive them down there and bring them there, and those are generally the least at-risk kids rather than the more difficult ones. So one aspect of these programs is, how do you go out and pull in the more difficult, recalcitrant, at-risk families? Next. The item of cost, Healthy Head Start is a big, expensive program. $26,000 over 5 years because you're paying for daycare or child care over 3 or 4 years. Parent training is the least expensive because we're only doing these sessions, 10 or 20 sessions, one and a half hours. So we're talking about a program that costs a lot less than $3,000. Again, this is the prevention field, folks. You can spend tons of money. You can spend little bits of money. You can have high quality, low quality. What's the impact? And the answer, please. Well, this isn't the answer. This is the calculation for those of you quick at math. We multiply the targeting times the impact and divide by the cost, and now we get the answer. And this is the chart that everybody likes and was in the New York Times and everything. This is the comparison. This is, if you put $1 million into each one of these programs, this is our estimate about how many serious crimes you would prevent. And over here on the right is the California Three Strikes Law. You prevent about 60 serious crimes with your million-dollar investment. And over on the right, we have ran three strikes. We tried to improve it with a little better targeting and everything else. It turns out that you can't. It's hard to predict who the violent offenders are going to be. So it's hard to even with an attempt to target. You can't get much more effective. So look over there at graduation incentives. Our same $1 million that bought 60 prevented 60 serious crimes looks like it's going to prevent 250 or more. If you put it into parent training, it's going to prevent something like 150. This is new kind of information. Nobody had ever done this kind of an estimate. What it suggests is those victim advocates who are out there saying, we don't want any more serious crimes, we want to lock people up. If you really feel strongly about that, you're going to be arguing for programs that keep kids in school, for programs that make parents more effective. This is an effective way to spend your money. But I've already told you up front, these are academic studies. Nobody's really tried to do this. We're not sure. So now we got to ask a few more questions. Go ahead. I'm down to 5 minutes. Okay, we've left a lot of things out here. We've left out the pain and suffering avoided on the part of victims. We've left out other social consequences, improved health, educational attainment, and all that kind of stuff. And we haven't looked at what the impact is on the criminal justice system. Well, I understand in this audience we have some fans of the home visits and the healthy start and that kind of thing, and that didn't come out very well in our analysis. You'll be happy to hear, or maybe you won't, I don't know. We're in the midst of trying to reanalyze this kind of data, particularly for the home visiting kinds of programs. We're working with the Castle Rock film, Rob Reiner, on the early education campaign. He's going to have an ABC primetime special in April that looks at this issue of the 0 to 3 age range and the value of programs. And we're doing the cost-benefit analysis for that particular campaign. And I have to assure you, when you throw in these other social consequences, these programs do turn out to be cost-effective. The reason they're not real effective for crime fighting is you have to wait so darn long. You invest your money from 0 to 3, and then you have to sit there and wait 15 years. And if there's any kind of discounting applied, and all our calculations are based on a 4% discount rate, it's a heavy burden for that cost to bear. But it turns out that the home visit programs get mom back in the workforce quicker, reduce the need for AFDC, reduce the need for special education placement for these kids. And so there are a whole bunch of immediate savings in terms of welfare, gains in income, reductions in education costs, and then they go on and they do less crime. And so those programs do turn out to be very cost-effective when looked at that way. Particularly, we're looking at the David Olds Elmira study, for which we have 15-year follow-up, and the Perry Preschool, of course, is the other classic that comes in a little bit later. Now, on to costs, and this is what I talked to corrections folks about. In addition to looking at prevention programs, we are also the national evaluators for what's called the Violent Offender Truth and Sentencing Act. This is where the federal government, from the 94 Crime Act, provides money to states and incentives to build more prisons. And so I'm going to be talking to your people over lunchtime about what's going on in Wisconsin with prison building. The issue they face is, how do I get off this track of having to build more and more prisons every year? How do I get out of it? Well, this is how you get out of it. You prevent the kids from going on to have these careers. What this chart shows is, what are the averted prison costs that we get by doing these interventions? And you'll see with graduation incentives, our estimate is for California, with the three strikes in place, and that's the salmon-covered, pink-covered bar, we get more than 100% of the money back in what we would have had to spend on prisons. So we get it paid back. The whole issue about pay now or pay later, here's where it is. If you don't have three strikes, that's the yellow-covered bar, you get 60% on the dollar back. And you see it's different in other places. But this is part of the way you get off the treadmill of having to continually build prisons. Governor of Oregon, where we talked about this a month or so ago, is going to set up a system where he's going to front the money for prevention programs to counties, and then he's going to start counting how many people come on to into the prisons and the juvenile training schools from those counties to see if they can actually make this mechanics work to cut down on their expenditures. Okay, next slide. I've got 2 minutes left, so we got to run. There aren't any limitations to this study. This is good stuff. Go ahead. Next one. This was a modest first step. I mean, we didn't begin to do all that we wanted to do because of limited resources. We could do a much more thorough review and find other kinds of things like mentoring, supported work for kids, and we intend to do this. So this is not the last word on the subject. We have this problem is what if the assumptions are wrong? And I want to show the next slide. It's a technique we have that we use in these studies. When you're not sure of a number, like the targeting ratio or what the pilot prevention rate is, one of the grand things with Pentium, and now we got Pentium Plus, you can change all the numbers and rerun your analysis with so-called sensitivity analysis and test the sensitivity of the assumptions. So we started out with pilot, with parent training. We had a pilot prevention rate of 60%. That can go all the way down to about 15%, and parent training is still more effective than long mandatory sentences. Now, I'm not saying nobody goes to prison. That's not what I'm saying at all. But many states are adopting this. Whatever we have, we ought to have double that. There is diminishing marginal returns here, and this is meant to display that. So the parent training and the graduation incentives are both superior to these long extended sentences over a wide range of these variables. Stop. Well, I got to stick up one more chart. Show me the last one. The last thing we face is the scale of these programs. If you invest all your money in these delinquency programs, which was my fourth one, it's not going to cost you very much, but you're not going to get very much. This shows you what the reduction in serious crime is. California three strikes was going to reduce crime by 20%. If you go graduation incentives for 25, your most high-risk kids, you can bring down crime by 15%. So one of these doesn't get you there compared to a great big prison program. You're going to have to do multiple kinds of programs. Any ideas what's the right basket, what fits in your community? We don't begin to have the answer to that. That's the next step. Thank you very much.
I'll take a couple questions for Dr. Greenwood.
Okay, the question is how did the RAND version of the three strikes... And the RAND version of three strikes, it was very different. It said all violent offenders go to prison for the term prescribed by law, and that already, that's a big jump in prison population. So we let a few of the less serious offenders who are now going to prison out to make room for them. So it came out to be the same cost. But the notion is everybody goes. And the issue is there is you can't predict. You're just pretending when you think, I can identify this guy who's going to be the most dangerous one. You can't, and so the best thing is to lock all of them up for a short period of time, and the chances are you're going to have a lot more effect than picking a few and doing it for long.
Another question. Yes.
Well, it seemed that parent training was the second most effective. I'm curious about the other one, the graduation, came graduate.
So the question is, parent training came out to be effective. What do you do if you don't have a good, stable target parent there? You may have... changes in the household. Let me first talk about the programs. Parent training, I can slap down 10 good studies on the desk here that validate that program. There's no question. The graduation incentives, we've got only one study, and I'm suspicious of it too until I see it replicated in different kinds of places. But parent training, we know, works in a variety of settings, a variety of different techniques. The problem you raise is a good one. We do know that what's important in a child's life is a relationship with an adult kind of role model. It doesn't have to necessarily be the parent, but it has to be a strong, consistent, ongoing relationship with an adult. I haven't seen in the parent training literature how people have dealt with that. Generally, they've recruited parents. So I think one of the difficulties we faced here for people who are in the social work or the probation or whoever's going to do that is figuring out who is the person who's in this child's life. And maybe that's where mentoring comes in. Maybe that's where neighbors... Maybe that where grandpa and grandma comes in. But we're going to have to figure out to do that. And who is it who's basically looking out for this kid on a day-to-day basis and is going to exercise the control? Somebody's going to do it. So when we talk about structured programs for juvenile delinquents, that's what happens when we've let it go. Nobody's in that position, and now we're going to impose it. And there are counties that have turned to agencies to take over, run special high schools and what have you for these kinds of kids who need lots of structure in their life. They don't need to be left alone from 2 o'clock till midnight every day. Thank you.
Thank you.